Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner Show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner. Today, my very special guest joining us from Canada is Sue Hall, and we're going to be talking about her new children's book, Fish Don't Climb Trees, A Whole New Look at Dyslexia. Everyone is learning able. Some individuals just don't learn the way they are taught. If you have just discovered you or your child might be dyslexic or so-called learning disabled, Sue offers 5 hours to help you through the process. That would be Realize, Resonate, Road Test, Reality, and Relief. Author Sue Hall understands dyslexia from the inside out as a dyslexic person with vivid recollections of frustrations experienced in elementary school, as a parent who searched for and found a solution to enable a once-struggling child to learn to become a reader, and as a talented Davis facilitator, with 18 years of hands-on experience working with children and adults. For more information, you can visit her website, which is positivedyslexia.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Sue to the show. Good day, Sue.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
It is my pleasure, and I have a personal association with dyslexia. I think I'm on the mild end there, but I certainly... certainly do exhibit the signs, though I had no idea that that's what was going on. So
that was the same for me. I had no idea. When I was at school, I got through school, but it wasn't until my son was very obviously struggling that I came to learn what dyslexia really was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the listeners who may not know what it is, although we've probably heard it often, can you explain to the listeners exactly what dyslexia is?
Absolutely. It sort of depends who you ask as well, because if you ask the sort of conventional educational psychologists or teachers, they'll probably say that there's something not quite working properly in our minds, in our brains, and that signals are not being given to the correct, or the pathways are not quite working properly, and they're not sending the signals as they should. But if you ask me, I would say that dyslexia, the actual word itself, means a difficulty with words. And the reason we have a difficulty with words is that we have a perceptual ability which works incredibly well for us in the three-dimensional world, but words are made up of two-dimensional symbols. And the way that I can describe this gift is the fact that if you ask somebody to imagine an elephant, for example, you'll have a varying response. You'll have some people who cannot see a picture in their heads at all. You'll have some people who can see a 2D flat photograph of an elephant, and you'll have some people who will see a three-dimensional image of a real elephant. And for those people, if you can keep that image still, that three-dimensional image, if you can keep it still in your head, but you can move the part of you that's looking at it, so it's a little bit like we have a roving camera, and we can actually move it so that we could see the side of the elephant, and we could move it to see the back of the elephant, and we could come round to the other side of the elephant. We could probably see underneath it. We could see above it. That's our three-dimensional gift, which everyone who is supposedly dyslexic will have that ability to be able to alter their perception of a three-dimensional object. And the sad part of it is that when we use that three-dimensional gift in the two-dimensional world of letters, we put the elephant to one side. We have a lowercase d in front of us. And if we start moving around that lowercase d, just as if it were the elephant, we are going to see a line with a blob. We're going to see a P. We're going to see a blob on a line. It's not going to be that letter D until we get back to our original perspective. Does that make sense to you?
I have never heard it described that way.
Exactly. And the gentleman who discovered this is a gentleman called Ron Davis, and he wrote a book called The Gift of Dyslexia, and he made this personal discovery, and then he started mentioning it to other people, and they said, well, that's what I can do. And he said, well, maybe there's more people who can do this. And it's my understanding and my belief, having worked with children and adults for nearly 20 years now, every single person that I've worked with has this ability, and it manifests in different ways. You can have a difficulty with reading, with spelling, with math. You can have a difficulty with a sense of direction and coordination. But the underlying gift that we all share is this ability to alter perception. And it's unfortunate that our education system is totally unaware of this gift, and they're just always measuring us. They're always using themselves as the standard to measure us up against, and we don't fit in that standard. But we're perfectly capable of learning. It's just that we don't happen to learn the way that we're taught. So I'm getting a bit old now, and I'm finding it that I get less tolerant, and it makes me very upset.
That's the same way with me.
Well, I'm getting children coming to the door day after day who say, I'm stupid, I can't learn, I'm disabled, and it's just not fair. They are totally capable of learning. They're not in any way learning disabled, other than they have to go into a system that has no knowledge of this three-dimensional perceptual gift, which obviously needs a little bit of help in the 2D world, but it's not difficult. It really isn't.
Wow, that's very interesting. Now, it was when you, as you were going through and mentioning some of the challenges, and you mentioned directions. I have some good friends. They kind of teeter back and forth between calling me directionally dysfunctional or geographically challenged.
That's lovely. The funny thing is, I also have clients who have an exceptionally good sense of direction. So it's very interesting how I can have kids with a wonderful pitch, and I have kids who can't sing a note, and I can have people with an amazing sense of direction, and they can't get out of a paper bag. Brilliant at math, hopeless at math. Excellent with reading, can't read at all. It's just unusual. To me, there's as many different types of dyslexia as there are dyslexics.
It
manifests.
Mm-hmm. That is really, really something. Now, one of the things that I, as I was going through your website, Positive Dyslexia, there were several myths that about those who are dyslexic that I kind of like to address and just get your comment on it. And the first one is that dyslexics are learning disabled. So, like you mentioned, in schooling, that seems to be how they're treated.
Well, the thing is, the actual dyslexia, if you like, has three components. The first component is this perceptual ability, this wonderful 3D gift that we have that actually doesn't help us too much in the 2D world. That's the first component. And the second component is that our education system is built for the linear, sequential, sound-based learner. So the person who talks to themselves in their head has an internal dialogue, will do very well in our education system because it's built for them. At the other end of the scale, there's a person who thinks mostly in images and feelings, and they are not linear and sequential. They have these butterfly brains that can go anywhere at any time. And the education system is not built for them. So obviously they're not going to do so well in it. the usual difficulty, the most common difficulty, is when these wonderful, imaginative, creative individuals who can totally think outside the box, when they've managed to get through the alphabet, they are taught to read by sounding out. So if they see C and A and T, they're meant to go at to be able to read. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't do that. We don't have this sound-based conceptualization. We have this visual feeling conceptualization. So that's the second area that we seem to fall down in, is that we are seen not to be able to read, whereas in actual fact we can read perfectly well if we use spell reading, which is what adults do. And when you come to a word you don't know, you would say C-A-T and I'd say cat and you'd say cat, and then we'd be fine. So it's the perceptual gift that can be difficult for the actual letters. It's the reading process that is not ours that can be difficult when we come to read. And the third component is that every word has three parts to it. It has what it looks like, it has what it means, and how you say it. So a word like tree looks like T-R-E-E. We say tree, and we can always imagine a tree because we can see them. And if I say to you desk and table and chair and window, you'll have a picture for those words. But if I say the word the, there won't be a picture meaning. And our education system currently thinks that we should just recognize these words. They're called sight words. And there's 217 of them that make up half of what we read. And because they don't have images behind them, they cause a blank in our picture thinking. We can't follow what we're thinking because the image is not continuous. We lose track. We drift off into our imaginations. And we're accused of daydreaming and not paying attention. But in actual fact, if we were given images, in our programs, we make our images for the meaning of the, and the meaning of if, and the meaning of as, and the meaning of so, and when, and how. All those little words can have images behind the actual meaning. And then if we have those images, the film in our brains that is created as we read can be continuous, and we can keep track, and we can remember what we've read, and we don't need to daydream. So what I'm saying is, if you deal with the three components, if you remove the reason for the actual challenge, then the challenge won't exist. To be honest, if you use these methods with the kids from kindergarten, if they were used between the whole class, you wouldn't have the challenges because they only arise because we're not given what we need.
Right. So now. If taught, you know, those methods were taught, would it benefit, you know, those who don't have dyslexia?
Yeah, exactly. There's a teacher here in Vancouver who's been using them for about 3 or 4 years now, and she said it's very interesting because the kids who are very linear and sequential and sound-based, they're still given the sounds, obviously, right? But they're having to be more creative because they're making models for the meaning of words, and they're actually being encouraged to be more creative. So it benefits both worlds because one world is being given the sounds and one world is being given the creativity, and they tend to end up in the same place.
Okay, wow. That's just fascinating. So now dyslexia is a genetic, I mean, it's a genetic, has a genetic basis, correct? So, so the idea of curing or treating it with medications isn't the right way to approach that?
No. The genetic gift is this beautiful perceptual ability, as I say, to be able to see a 3D image and to alter your perception of it. And when I'm doing these assessments with the kids and we're finding out that they can do this, I'll guarantee you one of the parents always says to me, "Doesn't everybody do that?" Right? Because that's what they do, right? And nobody actually talks to each other about how they think and how they learn. We just don't do it. You know, we don't sit next to people and say, "Do you think in images? Do you think in pictures? Do you think in sound?"
Sure.
I mean, they think you're a bit strange if you ask those questions. And they move away, but it's a genetic quality that we inherit, and it's not something you can grow out of. I have a feeling that I actually switched off my 3D ability at school because the only way I can tell you that I feel that is because it sort of came back. When I first did my training to become a facilitator, I used to see flat photographs. In fact, that's how I got through school, because I used to photograph the pages of the textbook. And then when the exam question came up, I could see the picture of see the page in the textbook, and I could answer the question. So that they all thought I was a good student. In actual fact, I was cheating because I had the book open in my head, right? I had this 2D photographic ability, but when I was doing my training to become a facilitator, I remember Ron Davis saying to me one day, please all imagine where you used to live. And I saw this sepia flat photograph, right? And all of a sudden it became 3D, and I found myself walking around it, and I'm thinking, whoa, this is what they're talking about. So I have a funny feeling that I turned it off to get through school, and because I was in a safe place again, it came back.
Well, see, now that's interesting. Because it seems that, you know, if it's something genetic, that the idea of turning on and off doesn't seem like it would be possible, you know, in the sense that, because, you know, I mean, it's in the genes, it's in the DNA.
Well, it was always there. It was always there. It's just that for some reason I managed to to use the 2D quality. It's interesting.
I can't
explain that.
Okay. Well, I just think that it's fascinating. I mean, the 2D and 3D aspect. Now, one of the things you talk about too on the website is the idea of a threshold of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you know, as I was going through and reading that, I thought, this may answer why I'm a little bit more, you know, exhibit behaviors that are more so sometimes than not.
Absolutely. If we're tired, if we're sick, if we've had a lot of change happening, if we're on medication, we're just feeling below par for some reason, we would appear to be way more dyslexic than the day where everybody's being nice to us and we've had a good sleep and we've eaten all the right food. It tends to go in that way. What the threshold for confusion means is that when we're confused, this part of us that does the looking, Ron Davis happens to call it the mind's eye, and quite frankly, it doesn't matter what you call it, it's our point of perception. When we're confused, our point of perception goes off to try and sort out the confusion. And obviously in the 3D world, it helps because we're taking 32 images every second. And if I'm looking at a pair of glasses, for example, and I'm taking 32 images of it in a second, it gives me plenty of information to figure out the fact that these were, in fact, my glasses, right? So that in the real world, it sorts out the confusion. But if, again, I'm looking at the 2D world and I've got this letter D in front of me, if I take 32 images in that 1 second of the D, I'm going to get even more confused because I have too many images that are incorrect. And so I get even more confused. And it usually results in a sort of blanking out feeling where you just go blank. And I find that when I go to a great big superstore, I get to the entrance and I look in there and I think, what did I want? Why did I come here? Because it's just too confusing. There's too much information. And I just blank out. And sometimes I do it at the bottom of the road. Where was I going? But, you know, It's that threshold. It depends how much confusion we can handle. We can handle more on a good day. We can handle less on a bad day. But in our lives, we will always have confusion, and we will always have this response to the confusion, which is the ability to alter perception.
Wow.
As
you were going through and explaining, I mean, I can't tell you how many of times I've experienced that, and now when it happens again, I'm going to have a different perception of what's going on.
There you go. Well, it's a little bit like a fire alarm. Once you know you've gone blank, you know there's a confusion that you need to sort out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very much so. Gosh, well, we're just about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk just a little bit about the 5 R's that you have to help people with that, and then I want to talk about fish don't climb trees and what that's all about. Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Okay.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest joining us from Canada is Sue Hall, and we're talking about her book, Fish Don't Climb Trees, A Whole New Look at Dyslexia, Understanding and Overcoming the Challenges, Enjoying the Gift. And again, you can find out more by visiting the website, which is positivedyslexia.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, Sue, we're back.
Hi.
Great. Before we go on any further, now, if people want to pick up this book for themselves or for the children, where is it available?
I always direct people to the Friesen Press site. If you go to my website, there is a Buy Now link, and it'll take you to Friesen Press. I think you can get it through Chapters and Indigo sometimes, and definitely Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But they, to be honest, they're more expensive. I would go to the Friesen Press site.
Great, perfect, and they can get that through your website, so that's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the 5 R's. What are they, and how do they help individuals with dyslexia?
Well, my book is designed to reach parents, teachers, anyone who is obviously working with somebody who has this way of thinking. And the R's are the parts of the book, the realization of what's actually going on. The road testing part is what we actually do. The resonating part is quite a collection of stories from the students that I've worked with, both children and adults, because I was keeping this collection of stories, and some of them are just so wonderful that I thought, well, really, I should share them with somebody, and that's really why I started the book, not to keep all those stories to myself. The reality section is what our education system really is at the moment, and the relief section is how I think we could change it. So those R's are part of the book makeup, but the actual process that we work with is still designed from Ron Davis's original book, The Gift of Dyslexia. And as I mentioned earlier, there are three components to the challenge: the perceptual gift, the education system, and what we're not given. So, in our programs that we, when we work with the students and the adults, we work with them for 1 week, and first of all, we show them how to control their perceptual ability, and how they can make like a little parking spot for it, so that they know their perception and their reality agree. And if their perception leaves this parking spot, they'll know that their perception and their reality are different. And that's when they don't start trying to answer questions, and, you know, because basically it's not going to happen correctly. So we have to give them control of their perception. Once that happens, we work through the uppercase letters, the lowercase letters, making sure there's no confusions in there. And when it comes to the reading part, we use the spell reading, as I mentioned. They'll go C-A-T, we'll say cat, they'll say cat. And they tend to recognize words within words rather than the sound of individual letters, because honestly and truthfully, this whole sounding out process and the phonetic system, it doesn't work as every single time. There are plenty of exceptions, and I find that the kids that I work with get very upset when they've been told there's a rule and it's not a rule. And that goes for the spelling part too. And unfortunately, the more they've been encouraged to read phonetically, the more they'll spell phonetically. I mean, it's sort of obvious, right? So unfortunately, spelling phonetically is almost guaranteed a failure. There's very few words that you can truly spell phonetically. And so that's when they're given even more of those spelling rules. And the spelling rules have exceptions to the spelling rules. And so they're trying to pick the right Band-Aid to spell the word. And it's layered with opportunities for failure. So if you spell read, then you know that the word cat is a C followed by an A followed by a T, and when you want to spell it, you'll make that correct sequence of the letters. So you're cutting down the opportunity for confusion and failure. And then the last part of what we do is looking, say the word the, for example, we'll look it up in the dictionary, we'll make a 3D model for the meaning, we'll make the word in clay, and then we'll have everything we need. We'll have the spelling, we'll have how you say it, and we'll have the meaning, and our brains are perfectly happy, there's no more confusion, and we won't drift off when we read the word the.
Yeah.
So, that's how the program is made.
Well, that is something. So let me kind of there was one point you were talking about. Well, first of all, let's do the phonetic aspect. You know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that hooked on phonics. You know, back in the day, was just like that was the way to go. You know,
absolutely, it still is.
Children.
It still is. The current remedial methods out there are all based on sound. And I think Davis, honestly, is the only method that says, no, we don't do that. It's a tough one. I mean, a word like fight, for example, you know, it's not fighthood.
right.
It's very difficult. And yet, because the sound-based world feels that we should all learn this way, it came about because of the early brain scans. And the early brain scans pointed to the fact that to be a good reader, you had to process auditorily. Well, the current brain scans are showing that it doesn't matter whether you process visually or auditorily. What matters is you process, but you can have good and poor readers in both auditory processing and visual processing. But unfortunately, the education system hasn't moved with the current information, and they're still basing their phonetic and phonic reading styles in the old brain scans.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I've noticed is the preponderance of atrocious spelling, you know, and many times it is phonetic, you know, the misspellings are phonetic, you know, and I just, I just sit back and I'm thinking, you know, where did the educational system go wrong? You know, what went wrong that these, you know, that some of the kids are basically spelling phonetically and thinking that that is the correct way, and that that's fine, and that they're okay with that.
Well, this is the sad part, is because they've been taught to read phonetically, they just make the assumption that it's okay to let them try and spell as it comes, and if the more phonetics they've had, the more it will come phonetically, and that will be called atrocious spelling.
Yeah. Well, so now, this book, Fish Don't Climb Trees, now it's broken down into those five sections, the 5 R's, and did you say that the audience for this book is who is the audience again for this book?
For parents and teachers, family. It's not written for children. The beautiful part of it is that one of my students actually designed the cover. She was 14 when I asked her would she consider designing the cover, which she did, and one of my son's friends was kind enough to do the illustrations for me, but it is meant to be a sort of reference book, if you like, or hopefully in it, a book that enlightens people about what dyslexia really is.
Yeah. Well,
and how it affects us.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. And how it affects us? Yeah.
I beg your pardon. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, just in this short time that we have spoken, you have, for me, again, you know, because I've, you know, I haven't been tested, but there, you know, I have all the signs, you know, of someone who is dyslexic, you know, and again, and I think, you know, that threshold of confusion, you know, I've noticed, you know, as you were talking about, you know, tired or, you know, maybe not eating well or whatever, you know, but there are times when that threshold is higher, you know, and it's even more noticeable. And I think it's during that period where the threshold is high, there's more confusion, you know, and it's more obvious. I mean, to me, that's the time when I got the aha, oh, this is what's going on.
Absolutely. And this way of thinking, I think it affects at least one third of the population. The official figures are 10-15%, but they're the people who've been tested. And I'll guarantee you that for everyone who's tested, there's one who hasn't been tested. And currently they tend to test the kids who are obviously very dyslexic, but also more of a behavior problem. And I've noticed it's quite funny with the boys, right? They're very straightforward. I can't do this. I'm out of here, right? Whereas the girls are much more devious. They'll find some way of getting it to work, you know. Oh, you read for me. You're so good at reading, you know, that type of thing. So I feel that if you're quite, you know, if you sort of suffer in silence, so to speak, you probably won't get tested as much, or the likelihood of being tested won't be as great. But if you make it very obvious that this isn't working for you, you probably will get tested. I think there are way more people that have this wonderful way of thinking. And the other funny thing is I tend to use the word dyslexia as a compliment, and that gets me into a lot of trouble. Because I see someone who's incredibly creative, they're an amazing carpenter, or they're a fabulous architect, or they're incredibly good at some sport, or they're a strategist, or they're wonderful curlers, or that there's something that they're really, really, they shine at something. And I think to myself, I bet you anything they have this way of thinking. And of course, if I say it out loud, they obviously think that I'm saying there's something wrong with them. But there again, it's a stupid word. It begins with a dis, right? So obviously people think there's something wrong involved. Whereas if we'd actually called it Leonardo da Vinci syndrome or Einstein syndrome, we'd be fine. Everybody would be clamoring for it. So it's a really unfortunate label.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the one thing, first of all, you know, if people who know me often comment on my creativity. You know, and it's just one of those things that I enjoy. Uh-huh. You know, for me. Uh-huh. So, I mean, it kind of fits right in. You know that descriptive area, and you know, I can see where the meaning or the negative attribute. I mean, how dyslexia has gotten a bad rap. You know, in the sense that it's looked as a disability, when in fact it's
it's a result of a wonderful gift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, that is really something. That's totally shifted my perception of
dyslexia.
That's
the whole point.
That is.
That's the whole point.
Good.
But it's true. It's,
yeah.
It's not me sugarcoating. It's the actual truth. It really is.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe the talents of some of these kids, especially with the sporting talents and with the boys. They're obviously they're often very good at soccer or hockey or something like that. And their coaches will say they just seem to know where to be at the right time. And it's because their perception can see the game from all angles that they do know intuitively where to go. They don't know they're doing it. I mean, the people who use this gift very rarely know they're using it. I think Wayne Gretzky knows that he sees the whole game of hockey from above, and he's very dyslexic. But, you know, generally speaking, they just have this sort of natural intuition, if you like. It's just wonderful.
Now, do you think, I mean, this is kind of strange, you know, quite often when we're trying to shift a mindset about something, a lot of times we'll try and coin a different term. So do you think that there is, if you were to, you know, try and maybe shift away from the word dyslexic because it has that negative connotation.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can think of that may, that would have a, recognize the gift that
it is?
Positive
spin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this a lot, and the facilitators that I work with, it's been a common, you know, topic of conversation. But the point is, this word is out there already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really established. And for us to come up with a different word was going to take a whole string of PhD theses and scientific research. And it's going to be quite a hard sell, I would imagine. I mean, Leonardo da Vinci syndrome would be wonderful, you know? But I can't imagine how long it would take to make that something that would be, as common as dyslexia.
I totally
get what you're saying too. It would be wonderful, but we've thought of it. We think it's maybe an easier sell to alter the perception of the word rather than alter the word. But I don't know.
That makes sense.
We may be wrong.
I mean, it makes perfect sense, you know, and it's just sometimes it's so hard, you know, when something is so ingrained in the mind of, you know, of the general population to make that shift. It's like turning a huge ship on a dime, and it's really hard to do.
But I'll tell you something. Everybody who's read The Gift, the people that I hear who've read The Gift of Dyslexia, they are so happy to have had that information. The people who read my book and come to my website, and all the Davis facilitators all around the world, there are 400 of us at least, and we are seeing people on a regular basis. They because they have this way of thinking, or because at least one of the parents does, the shift in perception is just like clicking your fingers. It's not a difficult deal. The shift in perception that's difficult is for the people down the sound end of the continuum, right, to even consider the fact that we don't have sound in our heads as much as they do, right?
Yeah.
It's a really tough call, because if you're at the end of the sound continuum, you can't imagine that anybody could possibly see an image in their heads and alter the perception of it. And if you're down the visual kinesthetic end of the continuum, you can't imagine that there are people who only talk to themselves in their heads and they never have pictures.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just like, really? From either end, you know?
Yeah.
It's very interesting, because we only have ourselves as our we are our own standard, right? And we hadn't got this awareness that there could possibly be a different way of thinking. I thought everybody had to make word rhymes to remember information, and everybody took photographs of the textbook to learn. I mean,
well, when you mentioned that was cheating, that's not cheating. You just stored it in a different manner than everybody else. You know, that's
Fair enough.
You just had a different filing system.
That's not
cheating.
Well, you know what? I tell you, I do feel cheated, though, because I know now I hated math at school. Absolutely hated it. It's all concept. I never had any images for the concepts of multiplying and that type of thing. I now know, having done the math programs, that if I'd been given the images behind the meanings of those words, I could have enjoyed math. I could have enjoyed physics and chemistry. But at the time, I hated them. So
yeah.
I do feel cheated of an education.
Yeah, I understand,
know?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we've learned and we're hopefully creating, you know, more generations of understanding. Now, I have just one more question. We're getting toward the end of the show, but I have one more question. Now, with this being a genetic aspect to our being, you know, and you mentioned how some people are more on the visual and some were on the auditory, the sound ends of the spectrum. Has there been any look at, like, parent-child comparisons? Like, if a parent is on the visual end, that there maybe their child who's also dyslexic have the same, on the same end, you know, of that spectrum?
I can only tell you this from, I think it was one of my students who was studying genetics. For a girl to be dyslexic, she was thinking there had to be both parents who had this way of thinking, and for a boy to be dyslexic, only one parent needed that way of thinking. But that is nothing that I could prove scientifically. That was just her comment.
Okay, okay. Wow, this has really been fascinating, Sue. So I know several librarians, and I'm going to mention to them that they really need to get these books into the libraries. I mean, this is something that is.
I think it's almost criminal to label somebody something they're not, especially when it's a bad label, so to speak. And if children are constantly being learning disabled when I know for a fact they're not, then I think that's incredibly wrong. I try not to use right and wrong, but in this case, I think that's wrong.
That's
you know?
Wrong. I agree. I agree
it's
with
really
you there.
Wrong.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and this is one of those areas where the more we learn about our, you know, unique individuality and how we grow and process, you know, the information around us. I mean, to me, that's you know, to be able to recognize and, you know, support that, you know, and provide tools, to, you know, to be able to bring those gifts, you know, to maximize those gifts. To me, that's
absolutely
really what we ought to be focused on.
Absolutely. Definitely. Thank you.
Well, Sue, this has really been very, very interesting, and I really want to thank you for your time. I like I said, I know several people who are librarians. I'm going to go ahead. My brother has a library in Long Beach named after him. I'm going to tell him to tell all his teacher friends about it. So,
thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, again, this is something that we really need to get out there. You know, it really needs to be looked at.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I really appreciate you for your time. And, now, if people want to get in touch with you, they would get in touch with you through your website?
Through the website, absolutely. Yeah, no worries. And I love to give professional development day sessions, and anything that I can do to spread the word would be wonderful.
Well, that's great. Well, again, I really wanted to thank you for your time, and it's really been a lot of fun. And
my pleasure.
And are you on social media as well?
I do have a Positive Dyslexia Facebook page.
Okay, great.
I have refused Twitter, but I guess I'll have to
get there
one day.
I understand. We all have our. I'll be sure to like it. I may have already liked it on Facebook, but I'll make sure that I do so I can follow
you
there.
Very kind. Very kind.
Great. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest joining us from Canada has been Sue Hall, and we've been talking about her book, Children Don't Climb Trees, A Whole New Look at Dyslexia. If you know someone who's dyslexic, if you are, go ahead and get that book. If you know of teachers or libraries or any educators, definitely get them a book. It would be a perfect gift for the upcoming school year. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth's Children's Corner show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BiteRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BiteRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BiteRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.